Jeremy Renner returns to Paramount Plus for a brand new season of the original hit series, Mayor of Kingstown.
My job is to create a balance, avoid a war.
From executive producer Taylor Sheridan, co-creator of Yellowstone.
There's some new players in town, and they brought the plague.
And Antoine Fuqua, director of Training Day.
I know it's always been a war zone, Mike, but this is next level.
The mayor is back in business.
Are you warning me? You're going to find out.
Mayor of Kingstown. New season streaming June 2nd. Exclusively on Paramount Plus.
Paramount Plus and the National Park Foundation present A Mountain of Zen. Are you still listening? Good. Take a deep breath. You needed a break. This Earth Week, you can live stream 7 national parks for 7 days on Paramount Plus. So, yes, you can literally stream a stream. Paramount Plus, official streaming partner of the National Park Foundation.
From the world of Sonic the Hedgehog, a new hero arrives.
I am
ready. Is there anyone stronger?
No.
Tougher?
No.
Funnier?
I do not make jokes. I make warriors.
Knuckles, now streaming only on Paramount Plus.
Yes!
Welcome into the Odds and Novels podcast. I'm Matt Bream, Eric Scopel on the show as always. And I'm inside PPG Paints Arena, covering Oregon's run into March Madness here in the NCAA tournament. And Eric, like, are we really shocked that the Ducks went into the NCAA tournament and walked out of its opening round game with a victory over South Carolina? Like, you talk about the things going into this and the tournament, and you're like, well, they have to play well. But, like, this is March. This is what Dan Altman does. This is what Oregon does when they get into the tournament. They find ways to advance in games that they just, quite frankly, no one expected them to, maybe 2 weeks ago. And here we are. We're covering a round of 32 game now, previewing it. We'll look ahead to Creighton, but first we have to touch on the masterful game by Oregon, by Jermaine Cousinard, and by Anfale Dante last night, Thursday night here in Pittsburgh against South Carolina.
I think the thing that's standing out to me more and more is the value of Coach Altman in a tournament setting. Because you see it, you saw it in Las Vegas just a couple, just last weekend. We've seen it now with 8 consecutive NCAA tournaments where they've won their first game. If you give him time to kind of match up, compile a game plan, install that game plan, he's better than I think almost every coach out there. Right? Clearly, his track record is pretty unprecedented, and you're seeing even like last night. I thought it was notable that like Kentucky loses to Oakland. Kansas probably loses to should have lost to Samford. And, Calipari and Self are two of the coaches that are ahead of Dane on the all-time list and certainly two of the most respected coaches in the country. And those programs don't always take care of business early. And I just think the Dana Altman component should not be overlooked. He's really, really good in a one-game setting like this. And I think the same thing applies for Saturday's game where if you just give them a little time to set up and really game plan and stuff, this is where he's made his money at Oregon and has had so much success. And I think you have to have a lot of confidence based upon that going into the Creighton game, even though, as we'll get to in a moment, it's a lot tougher matchup, at least from my perspective, than South Carolina was. And to your point earlier about being surprised, not particularly. I felt pretty confident with Oregon would win. Oregon, the betting line, as we suggested, it might kind of went Oregon's way. Oregon opened the game with, I think, as a curve. Well, the lines closed at 2.5 point
favorites. 2.5 point favorite.
So I'm not surprised. It really wasn't an upset. Certainly from a seed line perspective, it was. South Carolina had a really good season. But, frankly, when I did my little pre-scout earlier this week on South Carolina, I didn't come away like overly impressed with what they were. Creighton is a team that has a lot more things that I think would concern me than South Carolina.
Obviously, the story of the game itself was – Jermaine Cousinard's 40 points on 14 of 22 shooting, 5 of 9 on threes. He also had 6 assists to just 1 turnover, played 37 minutes in that game. First 40-point game, I think, by any Oregon player. Correct me if I'm wrong here, but first 40-point player since Luke Jackson and the NIT in 2006. 2005.
2004. But Yep, you're right, though. That's the last time that it happened.
And I think that's the game where Luke scored like 27 or 29 straight points in an overtime game. It's just the eighth or ninth time in program history 40 points have been scored by an Oregon Duck player. It's not the program record for overall game, but it's an NCAA tournament record. Passing to Juan Porter's 33, which came in the Sweet 16 in 2007 against UNLV. Unbelievable performance, and this is what makes this tournament so awesome, because he came to Oregon from South Carolina, obviously, wanting to get into the dance, wanting to play at the biggest stage. The last season didn't happen. Got hurt, missed half the year. The Ducks didn't make the tournament, obviously. This year, it took until the very end of the year for the Ducks to play their way in, and yet in his playing in front of his grandma for the first time in years, he said, playing in front of a lot of friends and family that drove over from East Chicago and Indiana to Pittsburgh to watch this game, a career game. And he, Greg McDermott, Creighton's head coach, on Saturday said it's the best performance in the tournament so far, the biggest story individually from the tournament so far. And it's hard to deny that.
You know, I think it's crazy that the last two times Oregon's played a game, and these are obviously both must wins, there have been like, I don't know, program record setting performances. Like, we were just talking earlier this week, I think on Monday, about Nfali Dante and like where that performance stacks up amongst the best, you know, in Duck history. And then we're treated to arguably just as impressive, if not maybe even more impressive of a game, because you're talking tournament, you're talking 40 points, which, like you said, Matt, has had happened 9 times in school history. You know, it was better than I could have anticipated. But as we said, kind of going into the South Carolina game, I watched them and thought, like, there's the ability to drive and get to the rim and finish. I didn't think somebody would score 40. I also didn't think Jermaine would be feeling it from three like he was, which is so much kind of an up and down part of this, where, you know, oftentimes the difference between him scoring 25 and 15 is if he's 2 of 8 from three or 6 of 8 from three. So, I mean, this was a game where he was – everything in the bag was working. You could tell he was motivated by playing his former team. I know, Matt, you were there, and he kind of had some comments about a little bit of that in terms of back and forth on the court and how maybe that kind of pushed him.
One of South Carolina's players, I guess they're friends, and Cousinard said afterwards, like, he didn't take, like, literal offense to what was said. He called it was just typical basketball trash talk. But one of his friends on that team made a three-pointer over Cousinard, said something to him. I think Cousinard said, like, cash money or something like that. And that, for whatever reason, that just flipped a switch in Cousinard. And after that moment, he went off. I think he scored, I want to say it was 7 straight points for Oregon in the first half to kind of stabilize Oregon a little bit. Because if you remember right, like, South Carolina was starting to, they were starting to grind down Oregon. The game was kind of not slipping away, but it was one of those danger moments. And then Cousinard showed up in the first half with some big baskets. And then obviously in the second half was just a flamethrower from three. I think he made four of his 5 threes in the second half, and just willed Oregon to not only just like a close win, but a blowout win over South Carolina that, quite frankly, to your point of the value of Dana Altman, we saw that between him and Lamont Paris, one of the hot rising young name coaches in college basketball for South Carolina, was linked to a couple jobs and as potential candidates for other openings and what have you. But I felt like that was a game where Dana Altman's coaching experience, to your point, really shone through the box score and the end of the game, just the way that game played out, the adjustments that Oregon made in the second half, the 2-3 zone, the fits that it gave South Carolina, and you know, as good as Jermaine Cousinard was offensively, you know, I thought Dante's presence defensively also was tremendous in the way that he altered and impacted plays.
I think this, you kind of were seeing, that was kind of a perfect storm of everything working for Oregon. When you look at the way Jermaine was playing offensively, you can't expect him to score 40 every game. The Dana Altman factor with the way he coaches defense, with all the different looks he provides and how that just completely stumped South Carolina for like about the first 30 minutes. And then they actually kind of got hot. I mean, South Carolina finished making 11 of 24 from three. And as you said, Matt, it wasn't really a game that really came down to the wire. Oregon win by 14. I don't think they got it under double digits after the final, I don't know, in the final 16 minutes or so. With Cousinard, with the defense playing the way it was, with Enfalu, I think, as you pointed out, really stifling a lot. KJ Evans, I thought both of those guys just played really, really well around the rim. South Carolina had almost no success in the paint. That was one of the things we talked about. They are so reliant on their three, and Oregon made them pretty one-dimensional, and they themselves were able to be a little bit more nuanced offensively when you've got Jermaine going for forward and you've got Dante kind of patrolling the paint. They had no answer for Enfalu Dante. I thought that was one of the big parts. They had no answer for him. He could have had probably 30 points if they hadn't been forced to foul the way they were. I mean, he scored 23 points on 7 of 9 shooting, but that was a career high, Matt, I would assume. 15 free throws. Has he ever shot that many in a game? So
I don't believe so. I don't know definitively off the top of my head, but if it's not, it's really, really close.
You know, and I think that's the part, maybe just now shifting, Matt, unless you had a little bit more on the South Carolina element. I posted the stat here. In the month of March, Dante and Cousinard, this is what you want. You've got two seniors, and I'll just read. I tweeted this out earlier this morning. You know, Dante in 7 games in the month of March is averaging about 20 points, 9 rebounds, 2.5 steals, 2 blocks, and he's shooting 84.1% from the field. That's incredible. And then 84%, like, I don't even know what that is. I know everything is primarily around the basket and around the rim, but that's still just – it's really impressive. Just like kind of like almost Bo completing 70% of his passes in football.
Yeah. And Cousinard today, like, I think he was joking, but it also came across like very seriously. Like, they were upset that he missed like 3 shots against South Carolina. And Cousinard said like they were all right at the rim. Like, he finishes those. And, you know, as a team, we were pretty pissed that he broke his streak of consecutive baskets made. He'd been on one for a while, made 12 straight against Colorado in the conference championship game. And then obviously I think he made like 6 or 5 straight against South Carolina. What he's doing is absolutely phenomenal and impressive and unprecedented, but it gets harder now.
A lot harder
against Creighton. You brought up how South Carolina just did not have matchups to deal with Dante. Creighton does. They have Ryan. I'm forgetting his last name.
Kalkbrenner.
Kalkbrenner. Ryan Kalkbrenner, 7'1" center, who is. Think about the players that have come through the Big East and that have played the center position. Patrick Ewing, Alonzo Mourning. There's going to be a couple others that come to mind, but
Mutombo, I think, played at
Georgetown as well. He is a 3-time all-conference defensive player of the year winner in the Big East. 3 straight years, the coaches in that league have said he is the best defensive player coming out of that tough, you know, hard-nosed basketball league. I mean, I think when you hear the word Big East, the one of the first things that comes to mind is like, this is a conference that plays extremely tough basketball. They're very physical, they're defensive oriented, and you know, they have really good elite big men on the defensive side of the ball. And Kalkbrenner is the next in line there. I mean, he averages 3 blocks a game, scores 17 points a game, can hit the occasional 3-pointer. This is going to be as tough, if not the toughest matchup I think Dante's probably ever faced in his career at Oregon. And both coaches today said it's the matchup within the game that probably will dictate the most whoever wins. And I do think, you know, Oregon's got some, you know, Oregon shouldn't go into this like in total fear. You know, Greg McDermott even said himself, like, you know, Dante's playing so good and it's such a physical presence, like even with Kalkbrenner, like he said, we don't think we have the ability to guard him one-on-one. That's how good of a player he's playing right now. So whoever shows up, could, and if whoever stays out of foul trouble, that's what something that Ryan Krockbrenner said, could really decide this game between those two players.
Yeah, I think, it, you know, and I went and obviously I watched their game yesterday with Akron, which was actually pretty competitive for like about 13 to 14 minutes. And then Creighton did what it's done all season. We'll talk about the offense because that stood out, especially in that game. But just Kalkbrenner, you know, yes, in yesterday's game was certainly impressive. But I went and watched their win over number one UConn, and they beat them by about 20 points at their place earlier this season. And, you know, I think a couple of things stood out. And we have to talk about the three-point shooting because this team – shoots the hell out of the ball. This is about as good of a perimeter shooting team as you'll see. But in that matchup, I thought a big part of it was that Kalkbrenner totally shut down Donovan Klingon, who's UConn's starting center, one of the better players in the country, especially up front. And, you know, in two games this year against Kalkbrenner, I was just looking at it, Klingon scored a combined 18 points. He's an average about 13, 14 points per game player. He was held to 6 points in one and 12 in the other. So, you know, in these marquee matchups, Kalkbrenner has a history of being able to kind of shut down players. And we'll be very curious to see. I think this is – and this is why it was a good place to start, Matt. This is the matchup right here for me, is if Dante wins this and wins it semi-decisively, I think Oregon can win and maybe win pulling away late. But if he is unable to get it going, Oregon is so reliant on him. And the other part is, like, if he gets in foul trouble and isn't on the court as much as they need him to be, I know he's really good at avoiding fouls. Like, he doesn't really ever find himself in foul trouble. But this, as you said, is maybe the toughest matchup he's faced to date. Like, they really need him to be effective, and they need him to stay on the court. Even if he's not 23, 25 points like he's been the last couple of games, they at least need him to be able to stay on the court and play 35-plus minutes if possible.
I asked both – McDermott and Altman, transitioning here a second, to just what makes this offense at Creighton so special and so good. Because people don't realize that, you know, they don't turn the ball over a lot. And then B, they aren't the most athletic team out there. Like, that was one of my biggest takeaways watching them play against Akron. Like, athletically speaking, Akron was – they were able to hang, athletically speaking, with Creighton. But the difference here is, as McDermott said, that, you know, they recruit guys who are very capable passers and very willingly will pass the ball and will turn a good shot into a great shot. And their ability to shoot the ball from three is a huge difference maker, especially when you have Kalkbrenner in the middle, because he's going to attract double teams. He's going to attract extra attention. And when they kick it out for that open look, and that guard then makes the quick swing pass to find a guy completely wide open, history says that guy who gets the ball for the shot is going to be wide open, his feet are going to be set, and he's more than likely going to make it. And Dana Altman said that it's a team that they, quite frankly, have never really played before this season. He said almost half their shots are three-pointers. They shoot 29 a game. They're one of the top three-point shooting teams in the country. They're in the top 50 out of 370 teams in Division I this season for college ball. And they've got three guys that all can create for one another, that all can shoot threes. And it's going to be a tough matchup because they don't have, you know, Oregon doesn't have a lot of options. They don't have a lot of size on the wings. You know, when they play 6'7", 6'9", 6'6", guys, and they haven't faced a team that shoots it as well as Oregon or as Creighton. And you don't want to say this, but at the same time, like, for Oregon to win, they're going to have to play good, and they're probably going to have to hope that Saturday night is a night where all three of those guys for Creighton on the perimeter don't shoot the ball well. If that team is firing on all cylinders offensively and they're hitting threes, it's going to be really hard for Oregon to win, even if Dante and Cousinard can replicate what they did Thursday against South Carolina.
Yeah, you know, unless this is kind of an outlier game for Creighton, I think you probably have to score mid-70s to 80s to win. You know, just the way that they play, and you know, again, they average 80 points per game. They shoot, as Matt said, almost 33s per game. They shoot it at 36.1%, which is pretty remarkable for a team who shoots that high volume of shots. And they play like a six-player rotation. Like, this is not a team that is deeper than Oregon. Like, this is one of the few teams Oregon actually maybe has a couple more guys that they rely on. And they really play six guys 20 or more minutes. A couple other guys play like 5 to 10 a game. But basically everyone that sees the floor shoots the three and shoots it at a pretty high percentage. Like, aside from Kalkbrenner, who shoots 29% this year on like not a whole lot of, not a big sample size, like 50 total for the year. Everybody else is like 38 and above almost. I mean, it's really impressive. Their guys off the bench, we have to acknowledge Mike Miller's son, Mason Miller, is a sophomore. Yep. He's one of their key bench players. He shoots 46% from three this year. And he's not quite a, what was it, Jack Golke for Oakland, where all he does is shoot threes.
Yeah.
But it's not wild. It's not that far off. Like, Miller this year has taken 121 total shots and 104 of them have been threes.
Yeah.
So they are very much a team of snipers. They will shoot the ball from three with high frequency. And as we said, make it high frequency. Baylor Shireman is their leading scorer, averaged 18 and 9. He's a senior forward, 6'7". He's like almost a 50-40-90 offensive player, 45-38-87. That's a very efficient numbers. And he's going to be, to me, I'll be very curious to see how KJ Evans matches up with him, how they limit his clean looks, because he's a guy you don't want to let get going. Right. Talked about Kalkbrenner. Trey Alexander is a big, strong wing. He's kind of Jermaine Cousinard body type. But you know, like Cousinard, he can go off for, I don't know, 40, but he can certainly put a lot of points up. He averages 17 and a half a game. So this is a team that, to the what we've been talking about here, offensively, I don't know if Oregon's played a team quite like this. And frankly, Oregon's going to have to play close to an A offensive game, and they are going to probably have to force some turnovers. I mean, Creighton, yeah, as you said, like almost a 2-to-1 assist to turnover ratio this season, average about 10 turnovers and almost 18 assists per game. So this is a tough matchup in a lot of ways. On that side of the floor. But Oregon does, in my mind, aside from Kalkbrenner as the answer for Dante, like, I think Cousinard could have another big game here, just looking at the matchups on the perimeter. I'm sure Trey Alexander will draw that matchup. But, you know, I do think Oregon can score here. It's just, can they slow down Creighton? I think that's the big question.
Yeah, and that's where I was going to go next. Was I was talking with an Omaha-based TV reporter last night after both teams had played and we'd gotten our work done, and he made it abundantly clear that he felt like Oregon was going to be involved and they were going to be close in this game, because he said, yeah, when they shoot the ball really well, they are really, really good. But he noted that, look at their steals generated, their turnovers generated. It's a team that, from a Creighton perspective, that doesn't create a whole bunch. They're one of the worst in the country. I think they're in KenPom, from a steals forced statistic, they're like 350th out of like 370 schools. He told me that a big reason for that is because they don't take risks. They're not overly athletic. Greg McDermott said as much. They don't have the guys that can go and hit the top of the backboard, you know, jumping with their hands. They don't have those guys on this roster. And because of their lack of depth, he said they only play seven guys. And to your point, they play fewer players than Oregon does. They don't.
Yep.
So because they do that, they don't take risks. They don't foul. And you know, they're already limited athletically. I think Oregon is going to be the more athletic team on this court. I don't think they're going to be the more skilled team from an individual standpoint. From a Creighton team, and I hate to draw this comparison, but this feels very similar to Oregon Iowa in the second round a couple years ago. That Iowa team was loaded. They had Luka Garza, a really good big man. They had shooters all around him. Oregon won that game because they were too athletic. They, you know, Creighton couldn't stay in front of them. And then the size difference that Iowa had over Oregon was made up by the Ducks' athleticism, being able to just ball deny and speed up the game. This is going to be a similar kind of situation or game plan for Oregon. They have the better athletes, but they don't have as skilled as players from an individual standpoint. And Altman noted that, like, Creighton, they have rolled with seven guys, and they have rolled with the same seven guys all season. None of them have been hurt. And that's a big factor from at this point in the season of the team connection. I think Oregon has a chance to win this game. I wouldn't be surprised if Oregon wins this game. But I also you also have to be realistic. And you know, look, I said this about Colorado with some people down in Vegas. Like, they hadn't played a clunker of a game in a really long time before they played Oregon. And they did. They didn't play good. And they almost still won. Oregon is now kind of on a pace where, like, they haven't played a clunker in a while. I don't know if that UCLA game, maybe it was.
Close, it was a rough. Yeah, kind of a little bit. Closest thing
to a clunker. We'll see. Oregon has to play good, and then, you know, that will give them a chance. But it wouldn't surprise me either if Creighton shows up and just shoots the lights out. They're going to have the crowd behind them most likely. And Oregon just can't, you know, defensively, they've not been good, you know, traditionally the whole year. Right now they're playing good, but maybe some things revert back a little bit towards the mean. And it wouldn't surprise me in the slightest if Oregon wins, and it wouldn't surprise me in the slightest if they kind of get, you know, just shot out of the gym because of Creighton's open shooting and their proficiency of three-pointers.
And we have to acknowledge, even South Carolina, like I said, Oregon won pretty comfortably. South Carolina made 11 threes on, like, close to 50% shooting. You know, it's not like they played awesome perimeter defense on contesting threes. This is a team that is much better from three than South Carolina. They both rely on the three a lot. Creighton has just better shooters statistically. And if you watch their games, and, you know, and I think you have a pretty good idea of where their strengths are. I did want to ask you, Matt, you know, one of the things we talked about leading into the opening game was the atmosphere there. What was the Oregon turnout like? And was Greg McDermott correct that Creighton fans sort of supported Oregon? Like, what was just the arena like on Thursday for that game?
There was definitely more South Carolina fans than I anticipated. It wasn't like they dominated the arena. But Oregon, you looked across the arena, and basically anywhere you looked, you could spot like two or three, four people sitting in the stands wearing green and yellow. You know, so they had some people there, but outside of the Cousinard family and some of the other parents of the team that flew out, and some staffers, relatives and whatnot, you know, sitting right opposite the bench, a couple, and they had about 7 to 10 rows. Outside of that group, none of the fan base, you know, none of the Oregon fans, the rest of them, there was no really big pocket where they had a half a section or they had a whole section. And you couldn't, you know, they tried to make the Let's Go Ducks chant and what have you, but if the rest of the arena wasn't behind them doing it as well, you weren't going to hear them until basically the very end of the game when it started to clear out and, you know, no one was really cheering, whatnot. But it was a fun environment for sure. You know, Oregon definitely had some of the fan base that weren't involved in the game, the neutral fan rooting for them. Some of those were Creighton fans. But you have to note that when Creighton won, a lot of their fans actually left the arena, which I thought was interesting. It's going to be packed. I'm curious to see what happens. Like, South Carolina and Kentucky both had good fan bases here. Both teams lost. What do their fans do? Do they stick around? Do they come to the games? Do they root for other teams for upsets, which would be an Oregon perspective? Or do they vacate the arena and don't show up, which could create – you know, just an even more hostile environment. Now, naturally, there's going to be some neutral Pittsburgh area people here coming to the games, like, you know, like any site that has these. I would imagine they will be on Oregon's side just because it's an underdog playing, you know, a lower seed. But it's going to be an arena that's probably more so pro Creighton, at least early on, and then we'll see what happens as kind of the neutral fan gets engaged here. But it's loud, it's cool, it's the NCAA tournament, and that's what these guys are playing for.
I will say, just from perusing the Gamecock message board, I would be very surprised if their fans rooted for Oregon based upon the way they were talking. They very much resembled the jilted lovers over the Cousinard angle on things.
And they were
not very pleased on the message board, at the very least, I'll say.
And we felt that in the media here, post-game. I should say James Crepia. He did go into the South Carolina locker room and told me, Jim Crepi of the Oregonian, and he told me he tried to go talk to Lamont Paris real briefly just about defending, you know, Cousinard, and he wanted to just get, you know, Paris's take on just not bringing up any kind of negative anecdote or whatnot.
Right,
like from the perspective of a former player going against you, and like, did you try it all? Yeah, how close were you to be able to keep him on your team when you showed up and whatnot? And the South Carolina SID basically shut the interview down after the first question, saying like, it's not a story. It's, you know, it's just another guy having a good game. Da, 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 da. And you know, they were definitely salty, and I felt like that watching the game. You know, like you definitely could see Lamont, you know, Paris's body language, the way he was talking towards the officials. They definitely felt like they got jilted, and then on top of that, their former player, you know, going for 40 points. They tried to make their locker room not open to the media here, and you know, James and I were talking, and I made the comment like that's just the typical SEC thing where, you know, when they win, they puff their chest, but when they lose, and they're not supposed to lose, it turns into a woe is me, and you know, they try and, you know, get out of town quick. And that was the same thing with Kentucky fans. That's the one that's even worse. They're done with Calipari, and Calipari is, it's interesting.
We could have a very interesting conversation, yes. But 1-4 for Kentucky in their last four NCAA tournaments probably doesn't sit well considering he's making like $10 million a year. But anyway.
Yep. All right, that's going to do it for us. We'll have full coverage of this Oregon versus Creighton game. They win, they advance to Dana Altman's sixth Sweet 16 appearance in 14 years for the Ducks. If they lose, their season's over. Simple as that. Not a lot on the line, I guess, right? We'll cover it all on duckterritory.com. Until the next one, thanks for listening to the Onson Audibles podcast.
Talk to you later, folks.